here today. I really enjoy being able to meet other people, other congregations. I'm very excited about being district minister for the Eastern District. You know, I've been in ministry now for, and I became a youth minister in my home church in 1979. So it's been a long time since I've been doing ministry of one kind or another. And I think I've been doing this long enough that I think I can be helpful to other pastors and be helpful to other congregations. So I'm hoping that in this role as district minister, I can do that. It's part-time. I'm still pastor at Richmond. And in fact, our congregation just recently hired a young woman within the congregation who just completed seminary. We've hired her as our associate pastor, and she's filling in for me this morning. So that's Emily Nice, and the congregation is very excited to have her on board. All right, let me ask you a question. What do you value the most in a church? What is the most valuable thing in a church? If this church did not exist, and you were looking for a church, what aspects of its ministry, whatever, would you most be looking for? What is most going to attract you? Now, in my own mind, as a pastor, I tend to divide a church's ministry into five different areas. So why don't we go ahead and put up that first slide I've got. All right. So what do you value most in the church? Here's the five areas that I would identify as primary ministry areas. So there's worship, inspiring worship. You know, you might be looking for inspiring worship. And by that, I mean, you know, you want music that speaks to your soul. You want preaching that's going to be motivational and strengthen your commitment. You want prayers that lift you up. You want, you want an experience, an encounter with God that deepens your trust. Okay, so that's one area. Or a second area would be strong education and Christian formation. So you may be looking for a church that, well, has classes for all ages. And in those classes, you become biblically literate. I mean, you really learn the Bible. You understand the Bible. You understand its message. You can really dig into it. Also, there's classes that help you to gain insight into yourself and into your world that discusses relevant issues, current issues. You want a church that will teach you how to pray and spiritual disciplines, and that will equip you to be a better disciple of Jesus Christ. All right? So there's that area. Then there's enjoyable fellowship. We all want fun, right? You know, we want to hang out, have fun, eat a meal together, have a small group, build some social relationships. Maybe you've got a need of some kind. Maybe you're gonna be moving from this place to this place, and you could use some help, boxing things up or putting them in somebody's pickup truck and getting over there, you know. And there's just all kinds of things that you might be looking for in those kinds of social relationships and just having fun together and enjoyable time together. There's service, peacemaking, furthering justice. In other words, this is the ministry of making the world a better place for everybody. You know, you want to meet the physical needs of those who are without. You want to help resolve conflicts. You want to, you know, address things like racism and sexism and poverty and you want to make the world a more fair place for everybody and a world where we all have enough. And then the last area there, effective outreach and growth. So maybe you want a church where it's a church that gets outside of its four walls, that knows how to engage the community, that knows how to engage other people, that knows how to be invitational and inclusive, and knows how to bring people together and assimilate them and help them to follow Jesus and persuade them to follow Jesus and baptize them and grow the church. All right? So those five areas, possible areas. Now, maybe there's other areas, okay? But those are the five that came to my mind. Now, I want you to vote, okay? I'm going to have you vote on the two that, for you, are the most valuable, you would be most looking for in a church, okay? So pick two. I know you might think, well, no, I want to do three, four, five of them, whatever. Pick two, all right? And I'm going to have you vote, all right? You ready? All right, raise your hand if among your two is inspiring worship. Okay, looks like at least half the hands went up, something like that. Okay, how about strong education and Christian formation? Nobody cares about that. Okay, all right. Enjoyable fellowship. Oh man, almost everybody. Wow, okay. Service, peacemaking, and furthering justice. Okay, all right, about half for that, and effective outreach and growth. Okay, we got about a third, something like that. Okay, good, good. Now, obviously, they're all important, right? Even the second one that nobody voted for. Okay. They're all important. You are looking for a church that can do all of these, okay? Now, let's just say you have the ideal church that does all of these well. I mean, really well. Okay? Now, here's the shocking thing. Oh, you can get rid of that slide now. Okay. Just get rid of it. Okay. All right. Here's the shocking thing that the Apostle Paul might say to us. It's possible for a church to be doing all of these things well and still be totally irrelevant. This is what he says in 1 Corinthians, his letter to the church in Corinth, chapter 13, the first three verses. Let's take a look at these verses. If I speak in the tongues of humans and of angels, but do not have love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I'm nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. You can take away that slide now. The church in Corinth, and Paul's very well acquainted with them. He spent a lot of time in Corinth planting that church. Now he's writing back to them. That church is a very gifted congregation. It's just full of gifts. But Paul is telling them, you're lacking love. And because you lack love, all you're doing is noise. It's just noise. See, there are some people in that church who have such an ecstatic experience of the Spirit that when they pray, they just go into another level of consciousness, and they just, instead of speaking in words, the words just change and it goes into another language. And it's not even a human language. It's now a heavenly language. It's the language of the angels. I mean, how could you have a more spiritual prayer life than that? You've got some people there in the Corinthian church who are prophets. They're so connected with God, they can speak for God. They can tell you, this is God's message for us now today. There are people in the Corinthian church who are having visions. And in these visions, they are transported into the heavenly realms, and there is revealed to them the mysteries of the universe. There are people in this congregation in Corinth who have so much faith that when they pray, the impossible happens. Miracles happen. There are people in this church in Corinth who are so generous, they give up everything they have. They sell all their possessions. They give it all to the poor. It's possible that there may even be a couple of people in this congregation in Corinth who have actually sold themselves into slavery, handed over their bodies, you might say. And by doing that, they've raised money to pay off somebody else's debts or to feed a starving family. Or maybe by selling themselves into slavery, they were able to buy the freedom of somebody else. And if there's people in the congregation doing that, I mean, they must be the heroes of the church. But Paul says to them, all this activity you're doing, if it isn't grounded in love, it's irrelevant. Now, what does Paul mean by love? You know, we have this English word love, which I really wish we spoke Greek, because in Greek there's several different words for love and they mean different things, because in English it gets so mixed up because there's so many different things that we mean by this word love, and it's very confusing. But even in Greek it's still confusing, because love is confusing. So Paul has to give a definition as to what he's talking about. When he says, you know, you're lacking love, he has to tell them exactly what he means by that. So here's his definition. It's the next few verses in 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable. It keeps no record of wrongs. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Here, we can take down that slide. So he begins, his definition begins with, love is patient, love is kind. That really is the essence of his definition right there. Love is patient, love is kind. Those are the two characteristics that are at the heart of love. Patience, kindness. Now that's a challenging word for me. Because when I read that, I can't help but remember all the times when I was not patient. I am not always a patient person. My wife will vouch for that. I'm not always patient. And when I'm not patient, when I become impatient, I sometimes do things or say things that also are not kind. And if I'm not patient and I'm not kind, well, then that undermines any good that I'm trying to accomplish. Now, the reason why Paul starts his definition off with these two words, these two characteristics, love is patient and love is kind, is because this is exactly what he sees missing in the Corinthian church. You guys are not being patient with each other. You're not being kind to each other. And then he goes on to describe some things that love does not do. So, for instance, you know, love is not envious. Now, why would Paul point this out? Well, because he sees envy in that congregation. He can see that there are people in that congregation who are resenting other people because of their abilities that maybe they don't have. And there may be resenting that somebody is getting more attention than they're getting. He says, love is not boastful or arrogant or rude. But why does he say that? Well, because there are some people in that congregation who are saying, look at me, I'm really spiritual. And who have an attitude of, I am more spiritual than some other people in this church. Paul says, love does not insist on its own way. Well, why would he say that? Well, it's because there are some people in the church that are insisting on their own way. Okay, this is, it's coming down this way. He also says, love keeps no record of wrongs. Oh, why does he say that, do you think? Maybe there's some people in the congregation who, yeah, I have a list of times that I was wronged by somebody in this church or some people in this church, and they're holding a grudge. And then Paul finishes off his definition of love with this final statement. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Now, when he says it bears all things, he doesn't mean love is a doormat that invites abuse. Just abuse me as much as you want, whatever. I bear all things. That's not what he's talking about. When he says it believes all things, that doesn't mean it's naive. Oh, I'll just believe anything you tell me. That's not what he means. The Revised English Version, I think, does a better job of translating this verse in a way that gives what Paul's meaning is. So let's take a look at the Revised English Version here. There is nothing love cannot face. There is no limit to its faith, its hope, its endurance. That's what Paul's getting at. Now, why would he say this? Why would he be telling the congregation in Corinth, love can face anything? Why would he be telling them there's no limit to its faith, to its hope, to its endurance? Why would he be telling them that? He's telling them that because this is a congregation that is at the verge of breaking up, of dividing. And he doesn't want to see that happen. And he's telling them, what you folks need is love. You've got to get back to loving each other. And if you love each other, you're not going to give up. You are going to bear with each other. You're going to work things out. You're going to listen to each other. You're going to care about each other. You're going to want to understand each other. You're going to seek to build each other up, not tear each other down. You're going to build each other up. You're going to look for the center that pulls us together, what we have in common. You're going to forgive. You're going to work at reconciliation. You're going to endure. You're going to do this if you love. Now, I wrote this sermon. What I had in mind as I was writing this sermon is I was thinking about the Virginia Mennonite Conference, which is pretty divided right now. And I was thinking about Mennonite Church USA, which is pretty divided right now. And I was thinking about our country, which is pretty divided right now. And I was thinking about our world, which is pretty divided right now. I mean, within our conference, within our denomination, and like I say, I've been pastoring in one capacity or another since 1979. I have never seen so much division in the church as I see today. It just astounds me. And it's for many reasons, although, you know, the issue that's kind of at the center right now is whether or not to support same-sex marriage. When it comes to our nation is extremely divided right now. I have never in my lifetime ever seen our nation as divided as it is right now. The level of hostility, the level of distrust is just shocking to me. I would have never dreamed we could be at the point we're at right now. I'm just so surprised by it. And again, you know, there's a whole range of issues. There is same-sex marriage, but there's also gender identity, transgender rights, abortion. What's the role of government? What's the role of government as far as dealing with healthcare or dealing with poverty or dealing with homelessness or other social issues? How are we supposed to address racism? That's dividing us. You know, what do we even mean by the word racism? And where does racism come from? And what keeps it going? And how should we address it? We're divided by politicians. We're divided by facts. We can't even decide what the facts are. Who has the facts? Who's being biased? Who's misrepresenting things? Who's spreading disinformation? Oh my goodness, we are just divided on virtually everything. And then in the world level, the international level, the world is so divided. I mean, you know, we're all aware of the invasion of Ukraine and that terrible war that's going on there. But within many countries in the world right now, there are wars going on. There are terrible conflicts going on. And an awful lot of these conflicts are about what kind of a government do we want? Do we want to go with democracy? Do we want to go with autocracy? Do we want to go with theocracy? Theocracy being, you know, you go with one religion as the foundation of your government, and you combine the power of the state and the power of that religion. So we are in a world of division right now. Well, what do we do about it? And Paul would say, start with love. Start with love. Begin by loving each other. Even if you think differently, even if you believe differently, even if you choose differently, love each other. And if you're grounded in love, you'll stick with it. If you're grounded in love, you'll find a way to do this together. Now, let me make two confessions this morning. Confession number one is, there are limits to my love. I do not bear all things, believe all things, hope all things, and endure all things. There are limits to my love. And so what I need to pray for myself is, God, help me to love more than I do now. And here's confession number two. I don't like preaching about love. You know, Susan was so glad. We're going to hear about love today. I don't like preaching about love because I'm afraid, but it's just so obvious. It's so obvious that people are going to blow me off. It's so obvious people are going to be bored. It's so obvious people won't pay attention. They'll just say, oh, it's another sermon on love. Okay, we can tune it up. You know, it's so obvious that people will think that I'm being trivial. But let me tell you something. If there's one thing we need to go back to again and again, if there's one thing we need to keep relearning and renewing, it's how to love. Because without love, it is a noisy world. Simple. Without love, we're not achieving anything except further division. Without love, we're not a church, not really a church. Without love, we don't have a functioning society. Without love, there's no chance of peace or justice in this world. Now, here's the problem. In order to love, we have to have experienced love. In order to love, we must have learned love. We must have been convinced by love. And this is where the message of the church is so essential. Because at its basis, the message of the church is this: God is love. Ultimate reality is love. And God loves us so much, God gives up everything for us. So let us be grounded in God so that we are grounded in love, so that the church can truly be the church.